We will start this morning's presentation with the first panelist discussing the evolution of the Earth. The second panelist will then take up the evolution of humanity. In the late 19th century, William Q. Judge wrote, "We are not appearing for the first time when we come upon this planet, but have pursued a long, an immeasurable course of activity and perception on other systems of globes, some of which were destroyed before the solar system condensed." Let us begin today's consideration of the evolution of the physical Earth as it is so needed by self-conscious entities following the impulse to manifest and to progress. So we'll start with the evolution of the Earth. The path of spiritual evolution is at once universal, eternal, and governed by spirit, mind, and law. There can be no omissions. As yet, there may be many tantalizing unknowns to excite the imagination and observation of both the general public and the specialists. The absolute in all its glorious potentiality remains unknowable by finite minds. Much has changed in the field of astronomy since 1875. The field of study is now called astrophysics. The means and scopes of the study are now expanding beyond what is termed dense physical at this plane of reality. And certain research scientists have now become science communicators or educators for the common public. Among them is Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson. In a recent internet vignette, lasts about 2.5 minutes, Dr. Tyson presented the topic, the scale of the cosmos, and he explained it from the worm's eye view of what is now called the observable universe, alluding to the reality of the size and the position of what we call the Earth. He said the Earth is a tiny bubble among worlds without end. The scientist used certain analogies very familiar to modern students of theosophy. There was a visual of a waterfall to symbolize the scale of a bubble or a drop to the force of the whole, but the universality of the bubble, drop, or the whole. There was an explanation of the observable light force generated from 100 plus billions of galaxies, a force that can now be detected with modern apparatus, even though the origin of that force is millions of years in the past. He spoke of a force of light that is not limited to what we currently can perceive, that we can envision and understand is important. And we do that through what Dr. Tyson called the ship of our imagination. So we have a scientist alluding to curiosity, but imagination as well. Modern students of astrophysics are thus introduced to the concepts of a vast multiverse as a reflection of long ago causes. They're introduced to force and energy that undergoes eternal change of motion in a symmetrical fashion, to the complexity of manifestation resulting from forces invisible to the physical senses, but very real nonetheless. They're introduced to the concept of worlds without ends, the unknowable just beyond our reach, periods of manifestation and periods of rest. While Dr. Tyson continues to rely upon what is observable and measurable, what he is studying is actually the reality that the ancients so well understood and described from the ship of their imagination, rather than from the use of technical instrumentation. As part of a colossal universe, Cosmos with a C or cosmos with a K, extending across billions of light years in space and time. The Earth responds to the laws of symmetry and evolves across periods of duration that is termed in the philosophy of theosophy as a manvantara. The Earth upon which we walk is an entity reflecting the whole. It rolls through space, as do we. It exhibits seasonal cycles and reacts to causation, as do we. It reacts to the base desires and practices of humanity as a collective, as do we. Amid the forces of light, of centrifugal and centripetal motion, of magnetism and attraction, the Earth of our plane of consciousness exhibits a progression of states of manifestation. What was once a lush forest in Greece and northern Africa is now an arid desert. What was once a rolling plain in the Western Americas is now the Grand Canyon. Thus, the Earth goes through periods of manifestation, reaction, and destruction. Continents rise and sink. We can posit that this is observable at our plane of consciousness on Earth. It is possible, even probable, throughout the entire universe, the multiverse. Space unlimited. Absolute abstract motion of vibration throughout. Cause and effect, a universal natural law allowing for a progression of experiences and expressions. And here lies an application of the three fundamental principles, the propositions upon which the philosophy of theosophy is based. Since the 19th century, the ancient wisdom of theosophy has spread and has been explored by scientists and philosophers alike. William Q. Judge wrote that each grand period of manifestation covers more than 311 trillion human years. Human years are flawed and artificial devices to express the rotation around our small star, the sun. Modern scientists like Dr. Tyson are already alluding to 13.8 billion years of observable history of the universe. And he is also stating that the future will hold more observations and that the whole is worlds without end. Modern scientists are beginning to approach the ancient concepts stated by Judge. Since the 19th century, archaeologists, anthropologists, and geologists have worked to study the nature of the globe upon which we live. And the old Judeo-Christian timeframes have simply been disproven as more and more measurable proofs of ancient times on the planet have emerged. What distinguishes the research of the physical scientists from the metaphysical scientists is the notion of what is observable. Beyond the Aristotelian efforts exist the Platonic efforts. The ancient theosophists describe the evolution of a physical form based upon that emerging from spirit and developing first on unseen astral planes. Dr. Tyson does not address the prime mover. He cannot identify the ultimate power source, and others cannot find their missing link. In the late 19th century, William Q. Judge reminded us that the theosophic adepts insist that there are still in the earth bony remains if man, which carry his appearance in a dense body many millions of years farther back, have yet to be admitted. And these remains, he said, will be discovered by us before much time shall have rolled away. These truths have become self-evident. Fossils, many, many fossils have been discovered. So let us revisit the theosophical premises published in the works like Isis Unveiled, The Secret Doctrine, The Ocean of Theosophy. The Earth is sevenfold. It is an entity and not a mere lump of gross matter. There is the entity that we perceive on this plane and six others which roll with it through space. Could we perceive on one of those other planes, we would experience that corresponding plane of the earth. Regardless of our experience in a particular time or place on this physical plane, the reality is that the ultimate shape is globular or spherical. On the physical plane, this has been photographed already from space. A blue, tiny marble, a marble-like entity showing no fences or boundaries and glowing with light, rolling through space. The earth is described in theosophy as a direct reincarnation of a former chain of seven globes, the moon chain. What we perceive as Earth's moon, what we call Luna, is the visible representation of the fourth globe of that old chain. The impact of the moon on our tides, reproduction, psychic phenomena has been well documented. That is merely what Dr. Tyson would describe as observable. In the work of H.P. Blavatsky, is stated that what is not observable in the physical sense, she wrote, each of the seven globes of the moon chain sent its energies into space and gave similar light or vibration to cosmic dust or matter. And the total cohesive force of the whole kept the seven energies together. The entity we now call Earth or Terra responds to the laws of attraction and magnetism, visible and invisible. It had a reality first in the invisible and has a partial expression of reality in the physical on this plane. Far and above what is beyond, far above and beyond what is observable is the eternal reality of a life force energizing the whole. It remains stable while acquiring new perceptions and experiences, progressing or evolving as the collective intelligence allow for harmony or discord, progress or degeneration. Spirit, soul, unfolds at all degrees of density or substance. On Earth, the manifestation of the monadic life force upon which all the lower kingdoms pivot is called humanity. The earth evolves and solidifies so that humanity might use it as a vehicle of spiritual expression and potential evolution. So let us now turn to the second panelist, to the idea of the evolution of humanity and the use of this earth.
The real enduring individuality called in theosophy the immortal ego is a mind being proceeding along a self-devised and determined path of mental and spiritual evolution. This journey leading to full self-conscious realization of the interdependence and unity of all spiritual beings cannot be achieved without the experience provided by an appropriate human form. This human form is evolving as well, so as to provide better opportunities for the mental and spiritual evolution of the evolving ego. While all egos are engaged in the same process and heading along the same path towards the same goal, The stage and development achieved and the means and method available and used vary with the individual according to their karma, which is the effect of their self-induced and self-devised effort and choices. The body provided for the soul is the best available to fulfill that mission according to the limitations and dictates of one's karma. Not only is the physical body determined by karma to be the best available for the incarnating and evolving ego, but so too is the mother and father and family, since it is from their bodies, heredity, and faculties that the human child is born and nourished. While each human form is unique, it shares the physical and many of the invisible qualities of the family, nation, and race into which it is born. As the physical and invisible tendencies of the body and personality change and develop over the cyclic changes of a lifetime, so do the physical and invisible qualities of the family, nation, and race develop under karmic law according to their cycle. All these are different evolving aspects of the all-encompassing, evolving human race. So before proceeding into some of these general laws guiding human evolution or humanity's evolution, we might begin with a consensus of terms, meaning of terms. So in theosophy, humanity is the name given for the mass of egos evolving on the earth through a human form, which is itself ever evolving. The term race is the name given to the bundle of physical, psychophysiological, mental, and spiritual faculties that characterize humanity's form at a particular time in the cycle of its evolution. The term racial development refers to the progressive sequence or stages of humanity in its physical, mental, and spiritual development. The term races refer to the differentiations and variations that occur along physical, mental, and spiritual lines as the result of karmic and cyclic law. No one race is therefore superior to another race in terms of its original essence and source, or its ultimate potential and destiny. However, it is true under karmic law, and therefore the influence of human intervention, that a race may be in a better or lower condition than it was in the past. Humanity, races, nations, and families and individuals have their cyclic rises and falls, their days and nights, their winters and summers, just as does a day and a year. They have their corresponding mixture of tendencies, just as do fall and spring, dawn and dusk. The older generations of a family may be in the process of decaying in their physical and mental capacities. At the same time, the generation born of their seed and scattered are developing to their full potential in their own capacities physically and mentally. So it is too with the races of humanity. Coming then to the general laws involved in the evolution of humanity, we will just look at a few. And in our question and answer period, we certainly can go into the details. So the evolution of humanity follows the same universal laws as that of the earth. And as everything manifests in the universe in a sevenfold manner, according to the teachings of theosophy, There is a sevenfold division of the earth and a sevenfold succession of root races or great races that appear on the earth. Each great race varying in their external and internal characteristics. The development of these races follows the universal process of evolution, of spirit descending into matter and then evolving back to spirit, so that the races succeed one another similarly. The first and seventh races of the sequence are the most spiritual, and the fourth, the balance point, so to speak, between spirit and matter, is the most material and dense. As everything evolves according to the law of cycles, a cycle of evolution through these seven root races occurs on each of the seven divisions of the earth, the globes previously referred to. And this successive manifestation of seven root races on seven globes of the earth occurs seven times during the whole cycle of evolution on this planet. As the beginning and ending of cycles overlap, so too the birth, development, and decay of one root race overlaps the birth and development of the next root race. So these are some of the general principles or laws involved, a bird's eye view, so to speak. We'd like to spend the remaining time of this presentation just trying to grasp the ethical and practical implications and applications of this teaching on the evolution of humanity. First of all, it teaches us to be patient with humanity and persist in our effort and hope for humanity, as humanity is continuously renewing itself through cyclic and karmic law. Second, it teaches to revere this entity we call the earth and care for the earth as the characteristics of humanity as it develops conforms to the evolving characteristics of the earth. We are not separate in our development and progress from the progress of the earth. And also, the evolution of the earth and the life in the various kingdoms that appears on it are modified in their details by the simultaneously evolving evolution of humanity. So we carry forward the evolution of the earth, and we can retard the evolution of the life on the earth through the effect of our actions individually and collectively. And finally, and perhaps most practically and imminently important, is the idea that all the races that we identify at this time by their different physical characteristics are one in their spiritual and material essence and origin. None is superior or inferior to the other in potential or destiny. The differences of the physical and inner qualities of the races provide the ultimate opportunity for the evolution of the reincarnating egos, gaining experience from each and all. This brotherhood of the races, in principle and fact, is the basis of the brotherhood of races and nations as an objective to be practiced. So we'll stop here in these formal presentations of the panelists and give you the opportunity to express your questions or comments on this very broad and yet deep and practical teaching of the coordinated, the simultaneous evolution of humanity and the earth.
Good morning. If it's okay, can I ask the first question, Brother Esau?
Yes, please raise your we're getting a lot of distraction in the background, unfortunately, but please ask.
I understand. I can wait because I didn't raise my arm.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead. Ask your question. Good. Okay.
So between where are they? Between where are they? Oh my gosh! The hominids and the hominins. Are there different responsibilities or parts that they are playing in the process of evolution and humanity?
We believe the question as a contribution has to do with the hominids. Or the primitive evidences in the skeletal remains we have of types of humanity or human beings, in the sense that they are erect, they appear to be mobile, dexterous, five fingers, have human attributes, and yet they are somewhere between what we call the modern form and development maturity of the human being and that of the animal mammalian monkey and ape appearance. So we would say generally that races in their physical, mental, psychological, and moral aspect have their rise and fall, their cycles of perfection and their cycle of rest, activity, and decay. Just as a fruit, when it gives forth it's the seed, and the seed has to develop into a new fruit, the seed itself has to die and decay in order for the new germ of life to spring forth from it. And so these hominids are not the precursors of humanity from the lower mammalian forms as taught in the physical sciences, but rather they are the important the generations that followed or succeeded a particular root race in its highest development, mentally, physically, and spiritually. So nature does not waste anything. And so as these forms deteriorate in their capacity from their highest expression, they still provide the opportunity for the egos developing through them to gain important experience that they need. Once again, they are a necessary process of the evolution because it is out of these the influence of these forces and that a new life, a new form, eventually expresses itself. JCS, did you have any other?
Yeah, one of the very exciting aspects of physical archaeology are the studies of these fossils and the role that Neanderthals and the various forms played. But from a feminist point of view, there is one tiny little fossil from Olduvai Gorge that the Leakey family has studied for many decades. It has been nicknamed Eve, because it's a tiny little female, and the DNA substance of this physical fossil is found in every single female on the globe today. So that's exciting because it does, even at the physical level, where too often in society we're hung up with physical appearances, even at the physical level, we can trace a oneness, a universal sisterhood, if you will. And because women birth males, this is a oneness for all of us. And it was an expression that was important for soul experience at its physical life the same way as our physical forms today, in this great array of diversity of appearance, is a perfect instrumentation for soul experience today.
Yes, we think that that's a good example in the physical level of how the earlier races, even in as they decay, become the basis and are preserved in the succeeding races. So we have within us the elements psychologically, physically, morally of the earlier races, although they are different in their expression. We might think of a tree of life, the trunk representing humanity. And from this one root, this one trunk, various larger branches begin to spread out. And as you go further along the development of the tree, more and more branches have developed. But each of those succeeding branches or limbs that develop are dependent on the trunk, its vitality, and the vitality of the branches that precede it, which give it nourishment. So even in that emblem of the, we can see and a reminder of the interconnection of all the human races and the importance of each of their stages of development. There's a, the child is father to the man. We have that expression in our general language, English language.
And it's very, very important as well as souls, as perceivers, that we identify the true nature of self. We're in society and anthropology, we've got all these remarkably deficient notions of caste and class and race and all the prejudice and separatism that's generated by that wrong thinking. When we say great root race in theosophy, we're not talking about the spectrum of physicality of all the brothers and sisters of humanity today. We're talking about stages of development that soul experiences at the various rounds and races, and that each one of us, regardless of what our appearance is, each one of us is an array of a particular root race, a particular subrace. There is a universality. And if anything, this is the curative thinking, the antidote to racism and all the other stages of causeless hate, of wrong thinking. MDW?
Yes.
So this vast story that was told to us, and here we are in this very moment. We're affecting our evolution, perhaps unconsciously, but now you've made this conscious. Is there, what consciously can I do to affect my evolution if I'm truly cast in the belief that we are all one?
Well, we can certainly start a response, but this is certainly the type of question that perhaps several of us have thoughts about. We can contribute. We might think of our evolution as humanity on this globe as what Shakespeare called and all the world is a stage, and on it we are as actors playing many roles. And so in this course of evolution, throughout of the ego, throughout the different experiences, we play many roles. And those, part of those roles is the particular nation, race, and family we are born into. and the role we assume, the appearance we assume, the faculties we assume to perform that role at that time. And as all the characters on the stage, in their turn, contribute important lines or verses to the play, and all are necessary for it to make sense to those who witness it, so too in our lives. We each contribute a verse, a part, a stanza to that play. We do it by the way we live our lives, by the way we express ourselves, the better part of ourselves, by our vocations. So collectively, humanity, collectively and individually, the units of humanity contribute to the experience of all and to the earth itself. So then we, focusing on ourselves, we can say, what are we doing in our everyday lives? The way we live, the way we serve, the work we do with our families, with our nation, race, to add our little verse to this greater learning experience that we all go through. We have a hand from either MHW or MJW. MHW?
Yes, to answer the question, what can I do? We would think that making proper choices and making, you know, having a life that is spiritually balanced, and looking at others as one with us, that we're all on a spiritual journey, that we're all hopefully going up that spiral, and that we can help others, even if we don't know them, just by our attitudes towards any kind of interaction. Because there's that, you know, if we're pleasant to one person, that might just change their attitude for the day, and then they can be pleasant to somebody. So it's just a, you know, it's the interactions, it's the spiritual choices. And we don't, there's so much going on these days that of course we can feel overwhelmed about what is it can I do? You know, that saying, bloom where you, or grow where you bloom, I forget what it is. It is, you know, that's what we need to do. Do what we can, where we can, and try and be conscious of how we're acting towards others, because there is that, the theosophical idea of universal brotherhood, and we're all bound together. Thank you.
And considering that notion of universal brotherhood, in reality, spiritually, there can be no other. If everything that we see or sense or experience a manifestation is from one source, there is no true differentiation in that spiritual reality, in the true nature of self. So as we look around our fellow members of humanity, there is no true other. There's a common human experience, a common human endeavor to progress and evolve. And attempting to hold that sense of namaste, I and you are actually one, it is we, what do we perceive, what do we see of the use of desire and motivation in action, and how might we join with one another to harmonize and to uplift the progression, the evolution of the earth, and all of the kingdoms on it, and every single soul in the human state.
We have a chat. Isn't racism based in the material or lower nature? Well, if we understand racism from our personal experience, what we observe around us, to be an evil because it's productive of harm, it's productive of destruction, chaos, despair. It interferes with the higher aspirations of the soul towards spiritual knowledge and brotherhood. If we consider it an evil, we may ask ourselves, well, what is the cause of that evil action? And we might say that the cause of evil is matter. Not matter in its essence, because matter is neither good nor evil. It provides the necessary instrument or form through which the soul gains experience. And in that sense, material forms, even our lower nature or temporary nature of this life, are good and necessary to the purposes of the soul. But when, as thinkers, we identify ourselves with those limiting qualities of our form, our physical form, our personality and its appearances, and identifying within ourselves, have a feeling of separateness from other expressions of form, other human beings, that separateness leads to a thought and action of selfishness, self-interest, the gratification of one's individual needs, desires, hopes, and a loss of the sight and appreciation of the needs of the whole, of the other, even in our family and our neighborhood. So in that sense, racism, any kind of characteristic of humanity, of sex, condition, organization, creed, religion, if it becomes dogmatized or formulated into something that we identify with that separates us from others, it can be a cause for evil. We have a hand up from BW. Go ahead.
Yes, brother. This seems, I think it says that the primates produce successive clades leading to the ape superfamily. And then in the Cretaceous period, which 85 million years ago, there's a diverge from other mammals. Also, the earliest fossils appeared over 55 million years ago. So between these two things or occurrences, there's a 30-year period. I wanted to call it preservation, but could you perhaps elaborate or explain it clearer to me? What is that 30-year period between them, something that's happening universally?
We don't know that we could give an explanation for the differences in those numbers, since they're perhaps based on physical and archaeological, anthropological discoveries, which deal primarily with observations on the physical plane. But what we could say in terms of the universal processes of evolution, as expressed in the first panelist, by the first panelist, is evolution begins within the spiritual, and then there are the development of the invisible but very real astral forms, which serve as the model. And gradually these condense into their material expression. And so very often when the physical scientists see physical forms, which they date to millions and millions of years ago, it's not necessarily that these beings existed as physical forms these many millions of years ago, but their astral forms during the process of evolution which did exist millions and millions and millions of years ago, eventually materialized. And so the fossils are sort of a material record, a material representation or preservation of that form in from an earlier stage. And so hence we see confusion and discrepancies in the timetable of evolution. JCS, did you have any thoughts?
Yeah, we're also invited as individual students to study the philosophy because there are very definite statements made that whereas the Spencerian traditions of Darwin's original theory says that man descended from the apes, that man descended from the primates. Philosophically, in this scientific religion dating back to the beginning of time, the teaching is that at earlier times, the procreation of what we call great apes today, the delayed race, was actually generated from very early physical forms of what we call humanity today. So in earlier rounds and races, there was interblending of forms that produced these half states of instruments for self-conscious entities. So we're thinking about the great apes, the chimps and larger, where if we visit them in nature preserves and in zoos and look into the eyes of the other, there's someone, there's a consciousness staring back at us, but that the true generation is not from early mammals to great apes to the current human state. And again, that's an individual study of a proposition. TK, your hand was up too.
Yeah, you know, it had to do with a discussion just a few minutes ago, and you know, the nature of racism from the as material. So, is it the case that if man develops from within outward, which is how the Earth developed, the energies that created the first work invisible or spiritual and eventually became more physical, then what today's average people call a race, it's just simply a complete misconception if they're looking at the physical, where races theosophically, but the human race, there are differentiations in development on in spiritual ways because there are different opportunities over the course of time. And whatever becomes physical has nothing, well, it's the effect of that, but it has nothing to do with it in the sense of causing that. But what we look at and call race is a completely different notion than what theosophy is talking about when we talk about the development of the human race and all the variations that we all experience in one life or another.
And that leads us to another chat, which was along the same line of thinking. Do we incarnate in the same race, incarnation after incarnation after incarnation? The answer would be completely dependent on the karma of the individual ego or soul or eternal pilgrim, so that it might be possible that one soul needs to work within a particular physicality, life after life after life for a while, in order to fulfill ideals, in order to fully learn lessons of selflessness, in order to truly serve the benefit and uplift an entire segment that's incarnating together. On the other hand, it may be karmically that as an ego prepares to incarnate, the family that's available, the body that's available, may only be expressing one aspect of the nature of the need for incarnation might be fulfilling one karmic development of character and destiny, and therefore may change life after life after life after life. The eternal pilgrim, the ego, the soul, the monadic essence, is eternal and changeless. But the great variation from one incarnation to another is limitless.
The other thing we might want to keep in mind, the ancient Greek philosopher said, you don't step into the same river twice, meaning that in the short time between steps, the river has flowed and changed. And so if at this point, if there's an average cycle of incarnation of human egos, let's say 1500 years, even in that short span, the so-called nations of the race, of the races that make up our national and family races, the larger cycles, they've changed. And so the ego may come in, has to come in to different conditions. Those conditions developing for the needs of the race of egos, but also, as was said, the result of the karmic intervention or interference of those egos when they incarnated previously. So in the course of our entire period of evolution as egos, we will experience all the different racial expressions as vehicles, as all the different roles in order to become better, to evolve.
Among and between these incarnations, while we might appear at this point in this incarnation on the Americas, it's possible that in future incarnations, we will appear on other continents and other nations and other cultures, because karmically, that's the best invitation to bloom where we're planted. We would have a duty karmically to come into incarnation to serve in a variety of different aspects and environments around the globe. So that's why when we care about the conditions of the earth and the health and welfare of the physicality of the earth, we know that this is one vehicle, boundless, limitless, without boundaries, at our use, our beck and call, and at the great potential for us to protect and uplift it.
So at this point, we would just like to take this last minute or so to remind you that this coming Wednesday, we, in our study in the Ocean of Theosophy, we are taking up the idea of who or what incarnates, and its implications, of course, to our individual, national, racial evolution, and even humanity's evolution. And also next Sunday, the title of our lecture is The Acquisition of Spiritual Knowledge. And the important thing is we gain spiritual knowledge from all our experiences every day, every year, every season of our lives, and therefore every expression of race or nation or family we incarnate is an important lesson and opportunity, a different view of life by which we can get a bigger picture of the realization of ourselves, the self of all, and the interconnectedness of all of life. So we'd like to thank all of you for joining us today and welcome you to attend by Zoom or in person at the Lodge in Philadelphia. Thank you very much.
Thank you.